I need an honest show of hands. If you were bullied when you were in school, would you mind raising your hand? Wow, all the bullied kids are over on this side. All the bullies sitting over here. Yeah, the National Crime Prevention Council says that 43% of all kids are bullied sometime or another during school. I was one of the 43. Seventh and eighth grade were just the worst 2 years of my life. I was a new kid in a new school with new glasses. And I was picked on by one kid in particular, and that went on for a year and a half. It made going to school just excruciatingly painful. It didn't end until this kid got kicked out of school and sent to reform school. And that, for me, was just a huge blessing, because all of a sudden, yeah, it was kind of like that celebration that I could enjoy going to school now. But being bullied is a terrible experience. Nowadays, it's even tougher because it used to be that when you finally got home safely from school, at least you could enjoy this period of time of safety and security in your home. But now, with cyberbullying and social networks being used to continue the attack against kids, hearing about kids that even commit suicide because of the cyberbullying that takes place. And then it doesn't end once you graduate from school. Workplace bullying and intimidation is a very real problem. Your boss, your supervisor might intimidate you to the point that you might feel like you're just back in school again. And it's not something that is germane to our culture. We know around the world bullying is a problem. In Japan, it's a terrible problem. It's one of the leading causes of the condition known as hikikomori, where a child refuses to really leave their room for weeks, months, even years, just because of the intense pressure that is put upon them by the stronger bullies in their school. And it's not something that's unique to our generation. Bullying has been a part of life for, well, even in Nehemiah's day. We're going to see in today's passage that Nehemiah, as he's getting close to the completion of the project that God has had placed him in Judah for, that the intimidation intensifies. We see that Nehemiah receives all kinds of intimidation, bullying of different forms. But how he responds to it is a testimony of why Nehemiah was such a special man of God, handpicked for that job. Remember, the walls of Jerusalem laid in ruin for 150 years. God raised up Nehemiah to help tackle this big problem of restoring security as well as prestige for the city that served as the capital of God's people. It's a little bit of a long passage today. Chapter 6, verses 1 through 16. I'm going to read it and you can follow along, but notice the forms that the bullying or intimidation took place, and also how Nehemiah responded to it and what the results were. Chapter 6, from verse 1, it says, "When word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me, so I sent messengers to them with this reply. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Four times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer. Then the fifth time Sanballat sent his aid to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter in which was written, 'It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it's true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become their king and have made have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now this report will get back to the king, so come, let's confer together. I sent him this reply. Nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are just making it up out of your head. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. One day I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in at his home. He said, let us meet in the house of God inside the temple and let us close the temple doors because men are coming to kill you. By night they are coming to kill you. But I said, should a man like me run away? Or should one like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go. I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this, and then they would give me a bad name to discredit me. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophetess Nodiah and the rest of the prophets who have been trying to intimidate me. So the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. When all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. Now notice when these desperate attacks really are intensified and come at Nehemiah, it's just about the time the wall is completed. They've rebuilt all the stone structure of the wall surrounding Jerusalem, and the only thing left was the hanging of the doors in the gates, or the gates in the wall. As they were rebuilding the wall, the hinges were in place, but they just needed to finish up the hardware on the doors and hang them, and then the city would be completely enclosed and secure. But what remained were these various points of vulnerability in the wall until the doors were in place. And the enemies of the Jews, of Nehemiah, thought that this is their last chance to stop the project while there was still some vulnerability left in the city. And so they intensified their attacks. You know, it's a good reminder that when the end is in sight, we need to realize that we have to be committed to push on to completion. Nehemiah was finishing up this work, and there has been so many problems to overcome, hurdles to surmount, enemies to resist. And the more you're fighting against the pressure coming at you, the more tired you become, and the easier it is to give up. I'm sure we've all seen pictures of the Olympics and the marathon race. And the marathon, usually at least, is completed with one final lap in a stadium. And you see these poor runners that have been running for close to 2 hours. And they come into the stadium, and when they come into the stadium, they see that finish line off in the distance, but some of them you can see their legs starting to falter. Some come in with great confidence and cruise to victory, but others come in stumbling and wondering if they can even make it. You think that if there was just the slightest stumble or the wind blowing in the wrong direction, whether they're going to be able to complete the race. As we get close to the finish line, realize that we're tired, that we're susceptible. Nehemiah's enemies understood that, and they intensified their attacks. They attacked him in three different ways. They tried to intimidate or bully him. The first way was through physical harm. It says that he was invited to a village in the plain of Ono. The plain of Ono was about 30 miles northwest of the city of Jerusalem. It was on the outskirts or the fringe of the area of Nehemiah's jurisdiction. It was also very close to the land of Samaria, which was Sanballat's home. It would be like being invited by the bully after school to come on out and let's meet in the playground. Now, why would you have to meet in the playground? Why, if you really wanted to meet, couldn't you just do it in the cafeteria where everybody was? But no, the bullies want to get you out away from where anyone can see so that the meeting can then turn into something more. Nehemiah knew that it was a trap, and he refused to go. Now, physical harm might probably be the most common among school-age bullies, but causing harm is still the motive for a lot of people who do try to intimidate. In the workplace, it could be trying to cause financial harm to somebody. You hear from time to time of people, supervisors, bosses, that attempt to damage a person either financially or damage their career because of something that they have against them. It happens in the medical field, in hospitals. You have administrators that can pick on doctors for certain things that they either do or refuse to do. It happens in the schools where administrators or teachers may focus in on another teacher or a teacher's assistant and attempt to damage their career. We see it even in the legal field. I understand that there is a state now where the makeup of the representatives in a state have chosen to retaliate against a certain former attorney general who prosecuted someone who is now somewhat protected or wants to be defended by the current politicians in office and now threatening to remove this person, remove the legal license that was given to this prosecutor. Retaliation takes place. Intimidation takes place. And it's not just physical harm. But notice what Nehemiah does. When he's threatened with physical harm, he says, I'm carrying on a great project. See, Nehemiah never loses sight of the reason that God had him where he was. He knew that God had him there for a reason. And carrying through with the calling of God was so important that he didn't get distracted by the intimidation that came his way. We always need to remember why God has us in the environment that he has, why he has placed us in the situations that we are. Typically, the reasons that we are at our jobs are much more than just to earn money so that we can support ourselves and our families. God has placed us there not just to do the work. He's placed us there to be a blessing, to shine as a light, to make a difference for his kingdom. And to remember that higher calling that God has placed upon us, that he has called us to, and to stay focused on that will help us to keep the intimidation in proper perspective. The reason that God has us in our homes is not just about cleaning or cooking or repairing or supporting. It's to bless, to encourage, to pray for, and to train those that we live with. A bully can make us lose sight of that higher calling in our lives. Now notice Nehemiah, too, used discernment. Four times he was invited to go to Ono for a conference. And four times Nehemiah said, oh no, to Ono. He knew that he should stay out of danger. And again, I know it's not always possible, but if we are in a situation where we are being intimidated, there are certain things that we can do, places that we can avoid to stay out of danger's way. It can't always be done, but using discernment is something that Nehemiah did to avoid the physical harm. Now, when the physical harm didn't work, the bullies next tried rumors and gossip. We see that the fifth attempt involved Sanballat's aide appearing with an unsealed letter. Now, typically, when you'd write a letter to someone back then, it would be on a scroll, and the scroll would be rolled up, and after the scroll was completely rolled, there would be a wax seal that was placed to keep it intact, and then an insignia of some kind was embedded in the wax, so that when the person received the letter, you'd know who it was from and that it hadn't been tampered with or read by anyone else. Much like our envelopes that we seal and send letters. But this letter was not that way. It was an open letter. It was intended to be open. It was intended to convey a message to Nehemiah that you're not the only one that's reading this. This may or may not be from the person who it says it's from, because there was no proof in it. It was innuendo. It was gossip. It was meant to communicate rumors to other people, not just to Nehemiah. And so it starts out by saying, it's reported among the nations. This is the old way of saying, well, they say. Nobody ever identifies who they is, but they say. And then Geshem says that it's true as well, that you're going to rebel. And you know, this is eventually going to get back to Artaxerxes. Do you see the veiled threat that's being made here by spreading rumors? They're saying, you know, there's some information going around out there, and a lot of people believe it. People are talking, Nehemiah, and they question your motives. They don't trust you. We can't really give you names, but they say. And that's the rumor. The fact that the letter was unsealed was the gossip, because it's intended that many people are supposed to hear this. And that's often the tactics that bullies will use when they intend to intimidate, to spread rumors or half-truths, to have people question the motives of the person that they're talking about. And this can be very difficult to deal with. Notice what Nehemiah does, though. He sets the record straight. He responds by saying, what you're saying is not true. Nothing like what you're saying is happening. But the problem with gossip is that you can't correct it to everyone, because you don't know who all has heard and how it's been distorted. This morning when I came to church, it was pretty breezy out. I had an armload of things that I needed to carry, but one of the things I was glad I wasn't carrying was a box with all the shredded paper from my shredder. Because you know what that's like. When the wind picks up little tiny pieces of paper, it blows it everywhere. Gossip is like taking little shreds of paper and throwing it up into the air. You have no idea where it's all going to go. And you can't correct it, because it would be like trying to find all of those little tiny pieces of paper and put them back in the box. And this is what Sanballat and Tobiah were attempting to do with Nehemiah, to intimidate him by saying, this word is going out. It's in an unsealed letter. You don't know who all has heard of this. But eventually word is going to get back to Artaxerxes, and you're going to be in a lot of trouble, Nehemiah. And so they attempted to intimidate him by rumor and gossip. Nehemiah understood what was going on. He knew, he said, that they were trying to frighten us, to make our hands too weak for the work. And it appears to have worked. It appears that Nehemiah was intimidated because he prays, like we all should in times like this, for strength to keep on going. You ever feel under attack, intimidated by someone? Remember why you are where you are, why God has placed you in that situation. And then it's important to continue to pray for the strength to persevere. Now, I'm reminded when Jesus was on trial. Remember, false witnesses were brought in, and he didn't even try to set the record straight. That's what surprised Pilate, that Jesus didn't respond to the charges that were leveled against him. And when he appeared before Herod, Herod asked him a series of questions, and Jesus didn't answer at all. How could Jesus do that when false accusations were made against him? He could do it because of the two things that we just looked at. He knew why he was where he was, the mission that God had for him. And just before going to Pilate, he had been spending time in prayer, asking for strength to carry on. And that's what Nehemiah did as well. He remembered his purpose, the important job that God had for him, and he also prayed for strength. Now, the final attack was an attempt to get Nehemiah to personally compromise. It says that one day he went to the house of Shemaiah the prophet. Shemaiah, his name literally means Jehovah hears. He was a man with a long history, an established family. We see that he was his father's name was here. We see that he is his grandfather's name is written as well. So he comes from a long line of people in Jerusalem. We understand that he was a prophet. And for quite some time, he had been locked up in his house. Nehemiah calls on him, and he attempts to create fear in Nehemiah's heart. He says, Nehemiah, come, let's go together to the temple and hide out because people are trying to get me and they're trying to get you. People are trying to kill you, Nehemiah. Maybe we should run to the temple, lock ourselves in, and there we'll be safe. You know, fear is a contagious thing. Shemaiah was attempting to demonstrate fear at the current situation, hoping that Nehemiah would contract that fear and be fearful himself and do something that he would regret later. When I was a kid, I used to go salmon fishing with my dad out through the Columbia River and out into the ocean. And I remember the first boat that my dad had was a boat that he built himself. I didn't know whether it was it wasn't a big boat, and how sturdy of a boat, I didn't know. And when I first started going out with him, he always made me wear a life jacket. But you see the waves, and you think, wow, is this scary, or isn't it scary? And so throughout each day that we were fishing, I'd ask my dad, are you afraid? And, you know, he'd say, no, I'm not afraid. So I knew that if he wasn't afraid, then I didn't need to be afraid. But there were times that I'd see my dad put a life jacket on as well. And even though he said he wasn't afraid, I knew he was afraid. And when he was afraid, then I was afraid. And I prayed a lot as a kid, just getting back in safely. But when those around you are afraid, it's easy for you to become afraid as well. Parents try to do that with their children. Situation might be desperate, but parents don't let on to their kids that things are bad, so that the kids can have the security of not having to deal with the fear. That's what they were trying to do with Nehemiah, to make him afraid by people around him acting afraid and suggesting that he goes to the temple. Now, Nehemiah, again, has discernment, and he knows that Shemaiah was not listening to God. He was actually listening to Sanballat and Tobiah, prophesying for them, not for the Lord. And Nehemiah says, I can't do this. I can't go to the temple. I can't run away. It's not right for someone like me to do that. So what is this someone like me that Nehemiah is talking about? Well, some people think that it's, since Nehemiah wasn't a priest, that he shouldn't go into the temple and commit sin in that way, because there were certain parts of the temple, the Holy of Holies especially, that was reserved for the high priest once a year. And so for someone to run in and attempt to take sanctuary would be a violation of the law of Moses. Nehemiah maybe perhaps is saying, well, it's not right for somebody like me. I'm not the high priest, so I can't go into the temple. And that would be a sin. But the other thing, and this is where I lean toward what Nehemiah was meaning, is that Nehemiah all along has been telling the people of Israel, God can do this. You know, it's a formidable task, but God is able. And if we trust Him, He can carry us through. And so for someone who has been proclaiming a message of God is sufficient, all we need to do is trust Him, for someone who's been speaking like that, but then to, because of fear, run and hide, would be displaying to the people that you don't really believe the things that you've been saying. Nehemiah, several times in the account here, has, when he prays to the God of heaven, the Lord of all, the one who sits above everything. And so for Nehemiah to run and hide would be to demonstrate that he doesn't truly believe that God is Lord of all. In a sense, this would be taking God's name in vain, to empty the meaning of what God's name communicates. And so for Nehemiah to say, I can't go, a man like me, it would be sin to run into the temple. He would be betraying the message that he's been trying to communicate to everyone else. What he'd be doing is ruining his reputation and ruining the reputation of God. When we are intimidated, it's very important to remember that it's not just about us, but our reputation as followers of Jesus Christ, how we respond in challenging situations. When we're faced with temptations to make personal compromise, we need to remember our reputation and the reputation of our Father in heaven. So if we're intimidated, if we're bullied, how do we answer that? How do we respond? And the answer is seen next in Nehemiah's account. And the answer is to take the situation to the Lord in prayer and leave it there. Now remember that Nehemiah was a very powerful man. He was the governor of Judah. And at his resources, he had financial wherewithal to put into place. He had personnel resources that he could draw upon. He could attack back to Sanballat. Sanballat probably was the governor of Samaria, but it's not expressed. But Nehemiah had the power to respond. But Nehemiah didn't respond in kind. He didn't fight back. Isn't that our tendencies when we are intimidated or bullied that we want to fight back? Nehemiah took his concerns, his problems to the Lord, and he left it there. Listen to what, or look at what he says when he prays. He simply says, "Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who have been trying to intimidate me." He could have done something in his own strength, but in this case, he's simply praying, wanting God to deal out justice. Now, Jesus calls his followers to an even higher standard, doesn't he? In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says that we are to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us. Nehemiah, he doesn't come out expressly and say it, but when he says, "Remember these enemies of mine, O God," I think that deep down inside he's kind of hoping that lightning bolts will come down from heaven or some kind of sickness will overtake them. But Jesus tells his followers, for those who persecute us, we're to love them and pray for them. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus tells his followers to bless those who curse you. And in Romans chapter 12, Paul underscores that by saying, "Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse." So either way, in Nehemiah's way of praying or Jesus, we pray and then we leave the matter in God's hands. I'm sure that most of us here have been hurt or insulted or bullied at one time or another. But the solution is not to fight back. The solution is not to hold on to the hurts that we have. The solution is to pray and leave it with the Lord and let Him work things out. That's what trusting the Lord is all about, doing things God's way and trusting Him with the results. And now finally we see the aftermath of all of this, the results. What happens after the people intimidate, Nehemiah responds by praying. And the conclusion we see in 15 and 16, Nehemiah says, "So that the wall was completed on the 25th in 52 days. They got the work done. But not only that, God was glorified, and the people who saw it were afraid to oppose the things of God." See, by not getting distracted by the threats of the bullies, Nehemiah and his team completed the project in less than 2 months. For nearly 1.5 centuries, the wall had been in ruin. And now in 1.5 months, the people under Nehemiah's leadership were able to make repairs. And as a result, it says that the nations were afraid. They lost their confidence. Not because Nehemiah was so great, not because the people of Israel were so great, but because God was so great. You see, it should never be about us. It should always be about God. And the important thing for us to do is to give Him plenty of space and time to do His work. Because when He does it, then He's the one that gets the glory. When we lived in Japan, we made the decision to send our kids to Japanese kindergarten when they were 3 years old. That was tough as a parent to take your kid off, to drop them off at kindergarten. They couldn't communicate that well. That's why we were attempting to get them into a school so that they could learn to speak. But to drop them off at 3 years of age and say, "Sayonara," and then to come back, and you know, there were days that there were tears. It was difficult. But they eventually made it through. Although when Kai went, was something that first year, Lois went to pick him up on her bicycle one day. Kai came out of the room, and there was another little kid in the room, Takeshi-kun. And he came out, and he followed Kai out, and he just kept saying, "Gaijin, Gaijin, Gaijin, Gaijin Kusai," which basically, you know, foreigner, foreigner, alien, and then "you stink like an alien." And Lois got home, and Kai got home, and they were both in tears. And hearing about what was going on, we both had a couple of fleshly responses. Hers was, "Oh, we're just going to pull the kids out of school. You know, we're not going to let our kids endure that kind of treatment. And even if we have to go back to America." My fleshly response was, "Well, we just need to teach Kai to fight." Some kid calls him Gaijin Kusai. I'll show you Gaijin Kusai. But we both knew that neither one of those were really appropriate responses. They would not enhance our reputation, and they wouldn't enhance God's reputation. So we did what we could only do, and that was to pray. We prayed as a couple. We prayed with our kids. It was very interesting because right after that, Kai said, "Well, maybe I should call and invite Takeshi to come over and play after kindergarten tomorrow." Called him up on the phone. Asked him if he wanted to come over and play afterwards. Said, "Sure." Came over, they played, they had a good time. Didn't say anything about our house smelling like foreigners. But God, through that process, turned a little bully into a little friend. And for the remaining 2.5 years or so of kindergarten, Takeshi and Kai, we lived fairly close to each other. They'd walk to and from school together. And God changed a bully. Kai didn't, I mean, it would have been easy for him to beat the kid up and then stop bullying, but that would have been focused on Kai, or his dad, who taught him how to fight really well. But simply by praying, God got the credit. And I don't know what's going on in your life outside of church. Hopefully there's no bullying going on here at church. But when you go back home today or go to work tomorrow, go to school tomorrow, do you have people in your lives that are intimidating or bullying you? I want to encourage you, remember why God has you where you are, what He's called you to do in that situation. Take those concerns to the Lord and then give Him time, as God did in Nehemiah's case, to do a great work that only God can do, and God will receive the glory. Let's pray. Father, I know how challenging it can be to have to go into a situation where you are intimidated, threatened with attack. And I pray that if there are people in our congregation today that are dealing with a situation like that, that you would give them strength. God, that they would have discernment, that they would have protection, they would be preserved from rumor and gossip, that they would be preserved from doing something where their reputation or your reputation is tarnished. God, I pray that you would answer their prayers. I pray that you would receive glory from a great outcome. Father, we know that one day at the end of life as we know it, that there will be great praise given to you for your justice finally prevailing. But Father, from time to time, it would be nice to have justice seen in our own lives here on earth. And if you do it in your way, I'm sure that all who see it will give you praise. Thank you for great examples like Nehemiah, for what can be accomplished when we don't get distracted. And I pray that you would help us to have that same focus on the calling in our lives, so that regardless of the opposition, for when or how it comes, that we might stand firm, relying on you and trusting for you to work out all the details. In Jesus' name, amen.